Good morning and welcome to our Sunday morning meeting. If you haven't yet picked up a schedule, do so, and you will see that the entire summer is taken up on the subject on Sundays of studying the individuality and the personality. But if you are beginning this study with the materials that we're into now, it may seem that we're far away from the subject, and yet what we are getting is the metaphysical, the universal basis for our understanding. We think it isn't just a Western notion that you should be able to jump into something and know all about it 5 minutes later. It seems to be a human idea, and metaphysical ideas are quite the opposite. We begin with a serious universal approach and then bring it down to the particulars. So our subject for today, the 24th, is the monad as a unit, part one, and part two will be next Sunday. Now, the materials are on the table behind the usher. Today's material, and then next week's if you want to take it and read it and study it at home. And that's not a bad idea, even if you don't study it, even if you just read it several times to awaken within yourself questions and pondering about these enormous ideas. We tend to forget we are spiritual beings, and if we spend our time dealing only with the ordinary and the everyday, we'll never exercise that part of our own real nature. So serious study, reaching over our heads, so to speak, is actually very good for us. The material for the next two in August will be out next week. We all know, of course, our meeting on Sunday mornings is from 11 to 12, and our meeting on Wednesday nights from 7:45 to 9. And on Wednesday nights in the summer, we are privileged to again be studying that textbook of sanity and spiritual health, the Bhagavad Gita. The library, the reference library, is, as usual, open from 5:30 to 7:30 for those who wish to make use of it. There is no other meetings during the summer, just the Wednesday and Sunday meetings. And these meetings continue to be operated on the basis of the policy of the United Lodge. Now, some of you may think it's a little boring to keep hearing about that policy, but if you really ever take the time to study it, paragraph by paragraph, you will see there is nothing else quite like it in this world, because it is a basis of principles itself, and it asks for you to decide what you will do with regards to these ideas, to these teachings. There's no rules, no code book, no dues or fees. It is all freely given by those who value and appreciate it. And we don't know if you ever think about that. Maybe you come to these rooms week after week, and you see that there are always a few serious students here who are doing this work. And they're not doing it for any benefit other than to reciprocate, to give back as it was given to them. Because you can't see into the past to those that we saw when we arrived who were doing the same thing. So the appreciation for what is offered here and the basis upon which it is offered is often overlooked. We take it for granted, and we shouldn't. It's a spiritual gift, and it's passed down from one age to another. So of course we invite everyone to attend our meetings and to participate, even if it is only in listening and paying attention. And of course, as is normal, the work is carried on entirely by voluntary donations of time, of money, and of effort. Now, our subject this morning, the first part of the Monad as a Unit, will be summarized, and then we will have questions and discussion.
The chair has prepared us for what will follow in these readings. The mystery of individuality, the monad as a unit, the problems centering around man's individuality are numerous, to state a few. Does individuality or self-consciousness have a beginning? If it should begin in time, will it not inevitably someday cease? If individuality or if individual units are absorbed into the one life during a period of pralaya, what logic supports the assurance that they will reemerge as the same entities? Are there self-conscious, individualized entities actively present at the commencement of a new universe? Inasmuch as the term monad means by derivation a unit, are all monads permanent, individualized units? And will the monad of an atom consequently someday become the monad of a man? The last question will receive treatment. The remaining questions will be discussed in future articles of this series. Note, the term monad means a unit. The monad is life regarded as a unit, though according to H.P. Blavatsky, the term is one which may apply equally to the vastest solar system or the tiniest atom. Elsewhere she indicated, the monads, jivas, are the souls of the atoms. And in the following statement she makes reference to their individuality. The monads of the present dissertation are treated from the standpoint of their individuality as atomic souls. Before these atoms descend into pure terrestrial form, but this descent into concrete matter marks the medial point of their own individual pilgrimage. Here, losing in the mineral kingdom their individuality, they begin to ascend through the seven states of terrestrial evolution. In the following quotation from the Transaction of the Blavatsky Lodge, we have graphically depicted the source of the monadic life in the lower kingdoms, and again, stress appears to be on differentiation of nature into individual centers. The next paragraph we need for individual study, because here it goes into detail. The different, and it uses the plants, the different variations of plants are the broken rays of one ray. As the ray passes through seven planes, it's broken on every plane into thousands and millions of rays down to the world of forms. Down to the world of forms. Every ray breaking into an intelligence on its own plane. so that we see every plant has an intelligence, or its own purpose of life, so to speak, and its own free will to a degree. Every plant, without an exception, feels and has a consciousness of its own. But besides the latter, every plant, from the gigantic tree down to the minutest fern or blade of grass, has, occultism teaches us, an elemental entity of which it is the outward clothing on this plane. Let us begin on the other side of the picture. However, we have her insistence that the monads are not discrete principles, limited or conditioned, but rays from that one universal absolute principle. The entrance into a dark room through the same aperture of one ray of sunlight following another will not constitute two rays, but one ray intensified. She makes clear that the use of the plural form of the word monad in connection with the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdom is due to the exigencies of explanation, and that the student must not allow the idea of unity to escape him. And we have here the following reference from the secret doctrine. Now, the monadic, or rather cosmic essence, if such a term be permitted, in the mineral, vegetable, and animal, though the same throughout the series of cycles from the lowest elemental up to the Deva kingdom, yet difference in the scale differs in the scale of progression. It would be very misleading to imagine a monad as a separate entity trailing its slow way in a distinct path through the lower kingdom, and after an incalculable series of transformations, flowering into a human being. In short, and he gives an example, that the monad of a homo dates back to the monad of an atom of hornblende. Instead of saying a mineral monad, the more correct phraseology in physical science, which differentiates every atom, would of course have been to call it the monad, manifesting in that form of prakriti called the mineral kingdom. The atom, as represented in the ordinary scientific hypothesis, is not a particle of something animated by a psychic something destined after eons to blossom as a man, but it is a concrete manifestation of the universal energy, which itself has not yet become individualized. A sequential manifestation of the one universal monads. The ocean of matter does not divide into its potential and constituent drops until the sweep of the life impulse reaches the evolutionary stage of man birth. The tendency towards segregation into individual monads is gradual, and in the higher animal comes almost to the point. Those are the high points of this particular section.
Two things. One, if you do get the chance, take these questions and think about them, because the statement was made in this part of the article or series that these questions will be addressed in the weeks to come. So do think about them. But besides all these wonderful quotes we have from Transactions and the Secret Doctrine, we would recommend, if you have the time and the energy, read in the Secret Doctrine the section entitled Gods, Monads, and Atoms. It is a mind-stretching exercise. Way in the back, you had your hand.
The bottom of the first page talks about each cell in the human body is endowed with its own particular discrimination. As in every animal, that was her question, is endowed with its own particular discrimination, instinct, and speaking relatively with intelligence. In the animal kingdom, we were trying to think what discrimination is, and we think of examples like knowing to eat this plant but not eat that plant, or that's a friendly beast or that's an unfriendly beast. But that difference.
I'm sorry, I'm just picturing an animal going, oh, that's friendly.
Which they wouldn't.
Right.
That implies,
but it says it, yes.
So is discrimination different from instinct in the animal or lower kingdoms?
Whew, you don't play fair this early in the morning. We would not think so, but we could be entirely wrong. However, what came to mind when you were speaking was one of the most interesting uses of discrimination, and that was a scientist out in the jungle trying to figure out how these gorillas managed to get rid of this particularly horrible virus that they had. And he followed one of them, and that animal walked for hundreds of miles to eat from a particular tree, and then came back to his own area and got very, very sick from what he ate of the tree, but it cured whatever the virus was. So that is discrimination, in that the animal must follow it, but it is instinct. In other words, And here's where we run into the problem. Language is so confusing. We think instinct is something that the animal is doing on its own. But the philosophy teaches it is a reflection of an intelligence, a thinking, planning intelligence behind that animal species that is setting the plan or the program that the animal then interacts with. Yes.
Well, with regard to that last sentence, it says every cell in the human body and animal body is endowed with its particular discrimination, instinct, and relative intelligence.
Every atom, every cell.
So really, in that sense, what she seems to be describing is that every cell has its own properties, and that instinct and intelligence is manifested as perhaps the electromagnetic properties of the cell. There are certain nutrients that a cell will allow through the cell walls, and certain that are not going to be allowed into a healthy cell.
But we also realize as well, over and above that cellular activity, there is another intelligence at work.
Right, and the electromagnetic, we're thinking maybe that's the level of the astral.
Yes.
But because it is what it is, it has to be electromagnetic. It has to be an impulse or a vibration of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, it begins its journey. And therefore, as it
Yes, but then if we take it, forget the animal for a moment, and take it the cells of the human body, that electromagnetic response is sent out. The example HPB uses at one point is you think you're hungry, but you're not. Your stomach is remembering and sending you a reflection of that memory that it expects to be fed. So it isn't you being hungry, it's your stomach being hungry and telling you about it. You then can ignore it or choose to do otherwise. So while every cell is alive and intelligent, it isn't in control of the unit. Yes?
So, but the monad is in control. It's just that it lacks the experience and the information to understand it.
I don't think you can say in control. Let's see.
Well, when we think of monad, we think that when we reflect and we find that stillness or that oneness or that unchanging aspect, we would think that that is the monad.
But what is it in relation to the life around it? It's the power behind it. The power is there. Without the chooser, the power can only act within certain limited ways. We, as choosers, direct that power. So when we're talking about the monad as Atma Buddhi, we're talking about power. When we're talking about it as Atma Buddhi Manas, then we're talking about a thinker and a chooser. Yes?
Well, H.P. mentions in some of her writings several very great brilliant scientists that were living there.
What scientists?
Yes, scientists. That she gave great credit for their work. Mm-hmm. However, she said, nevertheless, they could not escape from their scientific training and the language that goes along with it. And here, as the chair mentioned in this department, we have to put aside our normal education on how to think about the monad, because surely we're going to fall into that era of using the material scientific approach and try to enter. And we're here told to keep an open mind,
mm-hmm.
and the word monad is being used.
And as the basis of everything, we have to also realize that is the very foundation of universal brotherhood. You cannot imagine anything outside of that monadic essence. Everything is Atma Buddhi in expression. Yes?
Well, some of the confusion with the language is that the term individuality, even in our presentation here, is used in at least three different ways. One is such as an individual ray of light, which is only individual in its manifestation because it's all part
temporary,
of the
yes.
Second is an individuality in the sense of a discrete drop of water, which, well, separate from the ocean, is its own individual entity. And the third aspect is that of individual consciousness, intelligence, will in every plant, animal, and so forth. So it gets confusing unless you qualify what
right.
you mean by individuality.
Sometimes you overread for something, and then you have no idea where you read something, because it's like you've taken the whole world in. You tried to drink the ocean or something. If we always clarify for ourselves, everything is spirit matter, Atma Buddhi. We don't often think of Buddhi that way, but Buddhi is the spiritual substance that contains or reflects Atma. So we have spirit matter, Atma Buddhi. Everything is that. The difference is when the thinker is there, Atma Buddhi Manas, then you have an individual, self-conscious thinker. And actually, it gets more mysterious if we go back before that even. Why is Atma Buddhi? Why does the monad come forth periodically and bring these universes into evolution? Why? Yes?
Is it the vehicle for universal mind?
Exactly. So we have Atma Buddhi Manas really is the fulcrum or the driving force or the reason for being behind that expression of Atma Buddhi. It is said in mystical ways, the universe or deity seeking to know itself. And that is what the universe is, an expression of intelligence. Yes?
So then the monad not only brings forth the universe, but the entire universe is already reflected in it.
Yes.
Waiting to be
Which makes it even more difficult. But you mentioned about the discrete drop of water. We do think that every one of us can handle that analogy. If you have a drop of the ocean, and you take that drop of the ocean and put it back in the ocean, find it again. You can't. It's absolutely impossible. The same is true of all of us. We are a drop of that power of deity. Put us back, you can't find us. And yet, as is implied in one of these questions, we do come forth again with all we have learned and all we have failed to learn, because we are, what is that called when you're at the leading point of something? You're the
vanguard.
Yeah, that's it exactly. We're at the vanguard of evolution. Sometimes that makes you want to cry when you think about it. We are, but that's not the we see ourselves as right now. We are spiritual beings bringing forth all that we can to lift up lower life. Yes?
And although you can call it gravity, you can also prove that if you're not by the ocean, by watching the rain, a single drop hits the window and it is pulled toward the gathering drops that eventually become a puddle. It doesn't want to stay discrete, it wants to move forward and become something larger than itself to return.
However, just because life is such a challenge, gravity is only half a law. What's the other half? Repulsion. And that's the meaning of levitation. And, oh my. Yes?
Can we recall Mr. Judge's talk on the cycle, impression and return of cycle?
Mm-hmm. Return of impression, yes.
A periodicity, the coming forth, and then he gave that talk. We can't recall the detail, but it's understanding that's a good talk.
Well, it's a wonderful instruction on if you have a problem with moods or with temper. He shows you how to take yourself in hand and using the law of cycles and the return of impression, when that mood returns, whatever it is, whether it's self-pity or annoyance with family members, whatever it is, you stop, you note it. It's happening on this particular occasion. And you try to do something different within that mood. If the mood is self-pity, you get on the phone and you call someone that you know needs cheering up. In other words, you're changing the color of the cycle. When the cycle returns again, and it will in a perfect rhythm, it brings with it that new color that you added. You add some more. Soon, the cycle will come and it won't have any of self-pity in it. It is an example of our power. It is an example of the power of nature. That's the second fundamental, the absolute periodicity that underlies the universe, which we also call cause and effect. Yes, in the back.
Yeah, from last week's part, you think that, getting back to that previous question, that statement here that it says, Atma Buddhi Man is a human monad.
Mm-hmm. Atmabuddhi cannot touch.
You said the monad is the perceiver, envision itself, pure and simple, and it looks directly on ideas.
Let's all agree, though, in pronunciation. I think we all drive ourselves crazy sometimes. Are we going to say monad or monad? Monad is what we've been familiar with. Okay, the monad, Atmabuddhi Manas, the human monad, Manas or mind can only contact matter. Can we see that? How do we see that? How do we know that? It's not just words? Yes? Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between being power and being a chooser.
Yes, being able to use power.
Yes, so it would seem that just the power, being able to become as a monad, a thinker, to choose left or right, high or low, is different.
Then what you're really saying is you perceive left, you perceive right. You perceive high, you perceive low. The only way to contact matter is through perception. In the back, yes.
And as human, you perceive yourself. Mm-hmm.
We hope,
go.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we say we perceive ourselves, but usually we deceive ourselves. If we were really to stop and look at what we were about to do, or to say or to think, we might be horribly embarrassed because we might be more animalistic than any animal could ever be. Yes?
I know it's probably been given, but is there an agreed upon term definition for soul?
Well, you have to. Well, you have to add a qualifier. If we just say soul, we are talking about something that is non-physical. That's probably the most generic description. But if we're talking about the human soul, then Theosophy says that's the incarnation of the thinker into a form, and once in that form, conditioned by the desires and all of the senses in the lower. That's the human soul. But the human soul is, what you're talking about, the animal soul, is the lower principles without mind. Human soul is connecting the mind with it. And then the spiritual soul is Atmabuddhi Manas. So we are all of those things at one and the same time. Why do we show one or the other? Yes? And it's what we want. If I want to be an animal, look out, because no one can do it better. I've seen others do it. I've done it a few times myself. And sometimes there are some people who feed off that so completely that they have to set up situations. Have you ever known someone like that? Where they would go into a family party and begin to provoke things just to get people going. So we do what we want. And the problem is we think that's our only choice. We don't realize that if we would learn to want to be more spiritual, we would be more spiritual. Yes?
Go back to the question about how do we know that it's only through mind that we can contact matter.
Thank you.
We know that our ideas that we hold are shaped by physical conditions. Not only that, we can mold physical conditions
on the basis
of
our ideas.
We have.
Right.
That's the contact. Right. But if you think of spirit or its individualized aspect of the monad, think of electricity. Electricity cannot contact or be used in material form. form unless it works through an instrument. By itself, it can either be affected or affect this physical plane. So it just
and then another, but that's an excellent analogy. It's the power and the force, but we all know it's not usable on this plane without a transformer. What is the transformer? How I think, feel, and choose. We often forget that motive is more important than the action itself. Examples, somebody could knock you over and they did it because they were angry with you or you were in their way. Somebody could knock you over because you were about to be hit by a car. Completely different. Same action, but completely different motivation. So our motive is where we want to focus our energy and effort. It isn't that we're supposed to follow a real rigid set of rules to be more spiritual, to be more generous, to be more compassionate. It is that we should be looking at our heart and our mind. What are we looking for? What returns are we seeking? Because that's how we generate our own karma. Yes.
Yes, and keeping in mind the term of unity, or we may say the one unity expressed through many units. On the last paragraph of the part, it says the ocean of matter does not divide into its potential and constituent drops until the sweep of the right impulse reaches the evolutionary stage of man birth. A tendency towards segregation into individual monads is gradual, and in the higher animals come
almost to a point. And that really is next week's subject. But if you are at all interested in animal development, there are such fascinating things in the glossary, I mean in the transactions. One of the things we were always fascinated by is imitation. You know how, do you remember the first time you ever saw a walking stick when you were a little kid? It was like, wow, how did that thing know to do that so that it would be safe? In transactions, we want to read this just because it's so excellent. The unfitness of natural selection to account for the phenomena of imitation. A fact to hold good must be shown to apply, if not universally, then at any rate always under the same conditions. That is, the correspondence and identity of color between the animals of one and the same locality and the soil of that region would be a general manifestation. But how about the camel of the desert, with his coat of the same protecting color as the plains he lives in? And the zebra, whose intense dark stripes cannot protect him on the open plains of South Africa? We are assured by science that this imitation of the color of the soil is invariably found in weaker animals. And yet, we find the lion. Interesting, isn't it? In a work upon the subject under discussion, a certain Indian lizard is shown that is blessed with three large parasites of different kinds. Each of these three parasites imitates to perfection the color of the scales on that part of the body where it dwells. The parasite on the stomach of the creature is yellow like its stomach. The second on the back is variegated in color as the dorsal scales, while the third, having selected its hermitage on the lizard's brown head, is almost undistinguishable from it in color. This careful copy of the respective colors, we are told by evolutionists, is for the purpose of preserving the parasites from the lizard itself. But surely, natural selection does not mean to tell us that the lizard can see the parasite on its own head. We take logic and we try to answer things based on the ideas we hold. What theosophy asks us to do is take that logic and try to answer things on the basis of what we see and already understand, instead of the authority of somebody else's thinking. Rethink it for ourselves. Yes.
Continuing on that idea of intelligence in animals, there was a program on this morning about the intelligence advance, and the scientist was observing that an individual ant is not very smart.
No.
In fact, if you watch it, you want to help it. but in their collectivity, ants working together are amazingly intelligent, and not only that, they can do the wonderful things without one ant being the leader. So it seems to suggest that the individuality of intelligence in the animal and lower kingdoms is not in the individual mind, but in the group mind.
Yes, yes. You know, there's so many fascinating things to be learned about life and behavior through study of the animals and of the insects. We don't know if you're aware of it, but if a beehive is decimated for some reason and loses all their worker ants, worker bees, within 2 weeks, the bees that are then born will become only what is needed. Within a month, the hive will have replenished itself. The whole concept is absolutely amazing. Imagine if we, as human beings, were to put aside some of that personal, selfish thinking and begin to act like a group mind, there would be no poverty, there would be no suffering on the face of this earth. We could work wonders. Yes?
There's a sentence in this, that's the last paragraph, that it says that talking about atoms and makes us stay. Perhaps it is only the few that become evolving and ever-expanding individual vortexes, capable of attracting and absorbing lesser lives, entering on the path of individual growth. And so this is an analogy about the seed and so forth. But isn't that an analogy for us?
No? I'm sorry, I can't find it.
It's the next to the last paragraph at the end of it. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. 4 or 5 lines down. And next week's?
Oh.
One of those classes.
No, you're right. But it is a concrete manifestation. It has not yet become. All right, so I'm sorry,
no,
what was.
I'm sorry, I surrender.
You can't surrender before the challenge.
No,
that's not fair.
I have a class. I'm going to surrender.
Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Speaking of the monad as a unit, we're sure the chair could give us an example such as the Scottish sheepdog, the English sheepdog, how famous they are, those that trained them, the seeing eye dog, how one with a higher intelligence were able to impress upon those lower, in a sense, animal intelligence, their faithful servant. A sheepdog is a perfect example of impressions from above down.
Right, but we're not teaching that dog loyalty, any of those things. They belong to that creature itself. What is being taught is hand signals or whistles or various commands. If you've ever had the fun of being in Scotland and going to a sheepdog trial, you will spend your entire day and yet you cannot move. It is too incredible what those animals can do. And if you've ever read The Republic by Plato, you think about that line where he says, You never ask a creature of the same species to govern the species. In other words, the smartest sheep in the world could not do what a sheepdog can do, because he's outside that group and controls and commands it. If you stop and think about it, if it weren't for the way animals love us, you might not find much that was lovable about us. I mean, isn't it kind of amazing? All these creatures put up with us. We find it amazing. Yes?
I wanted to go back to the idea of the bees and the recolonizing or reestablishing. There was a theory, I've heard it many years ago, that among humanity that process does work, and among a certain amount of the population, there are only so many who will be fit to be generals. There's only so many who will be fit to be, you know, and although I can't prove it, this is just a thought on my behalf, when you look into the Gita and they speak about the caste system, it seems to complement that
it's a natural thing.
That idea, there is a natural way that these things
In one of the older magazine Theosophies, there's a wonderful example of exactly what you're talking about, and perhaps, you know, it's true in today's charts and things. If you take a chart and you have geniuses here and cretins here, they'll be the exact same percentage. Maybe it's 3% of the population is genius, 3% is cretins, and it moves its way down, always completely in balance. So it is a mysterious part of nature. Even if it's so, it's our choice and our behavior that makes us an idiot or makes us a genius, no matter what. Yes?
So going back to the ants and the bees, they are doing their natural duty.
Mm-hmm.
As was said, the single ant on itself can't do much. But those who are fit for the other work, which together makes the whole thing possible, just get to work and get busy. And the same with the bees. The geometry is part of their natural expression of being a bee, so they get right back to work building. There's nothing to stop.
Yes.
And on that note, we were talking earlier about the cells, and the cells have intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But are the cells communicating with each other?
Ah, yes.
And is that communication being controlled by a monad or some kind of higher that makes them communicate naturally, whatever you want to call it?
Well, it is within itself. That monadic power is there. Therefore, the ability to retain impression. But the fact is that Let's liken it to a car. Does the battery of the car have intelligence, and does it have responsiveness? Yes, but it can only do what it can do based on the driver of the car, or based on the functioning of the entire car. So it doesn't matter how intelligent an individual cell is, although an individual cell can begin to be selfish and cause cancer in that particular form. So the important thing is the overriding intelligence in charge of that form, whether it's an animal or a human. Yes?
So in that sense, that the cell doesn't choose, but the higher essence chooses, you know, from the level lies perhaps, that it comes forth out into a physical body as a disease. So, but this power, it's unity, it's cooperation. We see it through all the kingdoms, and man's, spiritual duty would be compassion, intelligent compassion.
Compassion within his own form and framework. You know, we're taught that not just the cells, but everything in the universe passes through us. And therefore, we impress it for good or for ill, as it impresses us in passing. Yes?
I think the best example we ever heard about that original question was antibiotics. I've never taken, let's say, this antibiotic, but science finds out it no longer works mm-hmm. on whatever disorder I had. But I've never taken it. How can it not work in me? Because there's intelligence and communication in on that level in that kingdom which says this action will change. It's dumbfounding when we think.
Well, the universe, entire universe is so intelligent. If we don't know that, we don't know anything. Yes?
Right, but when we talk about intelligence, especially in the lower kingdoms and in cells, we have to be careful not to suggest that cell is intelligent, but rather that there's intelligence in the cell. The cell's not conscious.
No, it is intelligent. That's what the philosophy is telling us.
To the contrary, there's intelligence in the cell, but the cell is not intelligent. There's consciousness.
Well, I'm afraid theosophy would have to disagree with you. The cell is intelligent, but when you're thinking of intelligence and when I am, it's a perceiver making a choice. The intelligence is the ability to respond properly to what's in front of it. That's intelligence.
Yes, there's intelligence, but it's not intelligent. The unit is not intelligent.
Yes?
You think it's really a question of which perspective you're looking at the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentally, right in the secret doctrine, it states at the very beginning that spirit and matter or intelligence form cannot be separated.
Right.
They're all part of the same unity. You can't have intelligence without form.
Form, you can't have form without intelligence.
So it's really a question of perspective. But we did want to say that this issue of what is the source of the communication, it's definitely stated at the top of page 2. Each species, whatever kingdom, from the monad, there is an energy that emanates that has a positive and negative magnetic relationship with the essential energy of every other species. So it is from within the monad that
happens.
That communication takes place.
And you know, with the definition of the cell, we are told in the ocean that there really is no such thing as the cell. That what you have is a framework, and that life, intelligent life, moves through it. So the cell has no real permanence the way we think of it. Yes?
And we recall the symposium of 2006, June, at the Masonic Temple in Philadelphia.
That was beautiful, wasn't it?
And you received a little white pamphlet with a picture of the young HPV on the front cover. And inside the first paragraph, there were some other pictures of science. She said, or predicted, that science would begin to lose its materiality, a material approach, and make peace with those of the philosophical approach. And right on the desk out there, it says a synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy. So that's a spiritualization of things, a lifting up.
Well, we do know that is going on in the scientific community.
Right.
I mean,
and
quasars and...
Our discussion on the monadic essence everywhere seems to fulfill the prophecy of a certain way.
And of course, another fascinating study, which some of us find a little too difficult, is to go into the Spinoza and Leibniz, not definitions, explanations of the monad, and how she says if you take these two great thinkers and put their ideas together, you have the full explanation. Of course, for some of us, that's not enough of a help. However, we all know that any kind of exercise, physical or mental, that involves stretching is good for you. And that is definitely what this is. We don't have to be afraid of it. We have to be willing to be foolish, be willing to be ignorant, be willing to realize what we don't know and not be embarrassed by it. Going back to your point earlier, we did not mean to say that the cell was intelligent. If that's what we said, then we were in error. It has intelligence. There is a difference between those two words, so we apologize for that. Now, these other questions that began this article, does self-consciousness have a beginning? If it begins in time, will it end in time? What logic supports that if we are absorbed into that one universal absolute principle that we'll come back out? Where's the proof of that? At the beginning of a new universe, a new solar system, are there self-conscious individuals at work already? And are all monads permanent, individualized units? So thinking about these questions and studying the material that comes up, like next week, can only be good for us, because we have to remember we are those monads. We're studying about ourselves, spiritual beings in action, using cells, using forms, using matter. Maybe not well, but using it. In the synthesis of occult science by Mr. Judge, he makes this wonderful statement. Every monad that is enclosed in a form and hence limited by matter becomes conscious on its own plane and in its own degree. Therefore, the atom is a monad. Every form is a monad. And though the degree of consciousness varies, yet all are one. For nature must be regarded as one complete whole. And then we are told by him to use that understanding of completeness to look at ourselves, to see how we fit in the universe and what is our duty and task with regards to it. On the one hand, we are nothing. And on the other hand, we are everything. Big questions. Well, we remind you to take the material for next week. If you like, that way you can study up on it a little first and think about some of these ideas. And maybe hold on to the earlier ones so that you can read them again someday. Yes?
I have a question regarding the material for next week.
Yeah.
It's titled Mystery of Individuality, Is I Am-ness Immortal?
Well,
should it not
I had a rough month.
Okay, no.
No, it should be the monad-ness unit too. Yeah, some of them may be correct. I had a dream about that, but I couldn't find the problem. Our meeting is adjourned. That's funny. I got up.